Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to another episode of The Culture of Comics. Of course, today with you, as always, is your host, Jason Fraser. That will be me, along with my co-host, the always wonderful Stephen Heiner. Welcome, Stephen. Good morning.
Thank you very much, and the force be with you.
and with you, good sir. So today, I wanted to preface our show a little bit today because we have something really special for everybody today. We talked a little bit last week about how with the original plan to do an independent publisher show, that it wasn't going to be incredibly long-range sustainable for us because Stephen and I can only read so much, and there's so much independent out there. So we're going to be trying some different things with our independent show as we go. And what we've got today with us is a very, very special guest. We're going to actually be doing an interview the entire show with a local Kansas City comic book creator. And this is a gentleman by the name of Marshall Edwards, who has actually published his first work, Prairie City Response, which just released, we believe, about a month ago, I believe. Marshall, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Very, very cool. I can't tell you how excited we are to have you on. It's such an honor to meet and discuss and talk with the comic book creator. Like I told you yesterday in our pre-show we've been doing all week, I'm hoping to do you justice today, man, because it's going to be a good one, I think. So
that's good.
To start off.
Looking forward.
To start off with. Very good. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, sir. It's all about you today.
Oh.
So
We'll get the pace down. It's not a big deal.
So I'd like to start off a little bit. I would like to start off with you and talk about what Prairie City Response is. Can you give us a little bit of a outline of what Prairie City Response is? I know I've already read the book, but our audience hasn't.
All right. It's set. Prairie City Response is set in Prairie City, which is a fictional take on Kansas City, but I chose it sort of so I could kind of do what I wanted with the setting and not worry too much about landmarks and, you know, just have a little more creative leeway. But the story is that there are aliens on Earth who first made contact 20 years before the time of the present day in the comic. And there is a new superhero team in town that... there's a superheroes union actually in the story who, helps self-regulate superheroes so that the government doesn't step in and do that for them. So they kind of make deals with local governments to help take care of things that normal police aren't able to do. So there's three new heroes in town, which are Zeno, which is a psychic with levitation and mind-reading powers, Dryad, who has plant-based powers, and Cannonball, which is a species of alien who is extremely tough, extremely strong, and has a military background. So there's a lot of... There's some uneasiness and animosity between the humans towards the aliens. A lot of the aliens are refugees from this galactic empire that... is trying to expand Earth's way. So there's a sort of a feeling of tension that's going to build throughout the thing about, how humans are dealing with the aliens that are there and what's going to happen with the empire that's sort of encroaching on them. So there's a lot going on, for sure.
I would say so. I have read the first issue, and I think in a lot of ways, I'll tell you this, I really enjoyed it. I think I'm intrigued about where it's going to be going. And I think, thank you. Yeah, I know you you actually reached out to us. And it's such an honor to be getting in at the ground level on a comic book. And it feels like at this point, it's such a new thing that it's kind of exciting to be at the ground floor and be a kind of a hipster about, like, I liked it before, it was cool, you know? So,
right, okay. There. Well, you know, I appreciate that. I'm you know, it's been an exciting time, that's for sure. A lot has been changing very quickly. I'm adapting to it. I'm trying to get it out there, get it seen, and work for continuing the series. So it's a big deal.
It is an intriguing concept. The first issue just jam-packed with things that are going to make you just want to know what the heck's happening. You know, it's just a matter of, you just don't quite know where it's going yet, and I love the mystery behind it so far. I really, really enjoyed it. So so far, I am a big fan. Let me ask you this, because this is I think this is intriguing to from someone who reads comic books but doesn't quite know how do they come up with this stuff. So let me ask you, what would you say was your inspiration for PCR? What inspires you with this?
Well,
what references? What?
That's kind of a fun story. I when I got back from college, I went to college in Missouri, came back to Kansas City. I had a group of friends who I always role played with, and we did a campaign with superheroes, and the character Dryad is pretty much directly inspired by the character Dryad that was in that campaign that I had. So the campaign ended pretty quickly, and I still had this character in my head. So I took some of the concepts from the setting and expanded them, created new characters, created this team sort of around. And originally it was going to be a solo book, but then I brought these other characters in because it didn't feel quite complete. But originally it was all about her backstory as I kind of expanded that world building. And eventually I decided I needed to go for it. I needed to make my own story and get it going. And, you know, if I wasn't going to try, then it wasn't ever going to happen. So
very, very interesting. Very cool.
So some of the things like... go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please, go ahead, sir.
Oh, sure. I was just going to say some of the things like aliens on Earth was in the original comic, but I think in my, you know, I put a little more of a social spin on it. So a lot of things that were in that original idea have been updated and changed and given my own feel to it, so I can put forth issues and ideas that I think are important and excite me, so hopefully other people will get excited too.
Good. So, as I said, having read the first issue myself, there are a lot. There's a lot of mystery, as we kind of implied there, around the character of Dryad. I don't recall ever actually seeing her face in the comic. I believe she was wearing the mask for most of the comic book. Is there something to that? And I don't want you to. You don't have to spoil too much. I know you've got plans, but is there something behind all of that,
right,
or is it just a design?
That is entirely on purpose. And it does relate to a backstory, and it may seem kind of cliche, but all three characters definitely have backstories that are going to come into play, you know, unhappy histories that are going to influence the team later on. So some of those things will come to light sooner, and some it's going to be further down the road. But I have a 4-issue story arc planned. Sort of a graphic novel collection, and by the time those 4 issues are done, all 4 of those, all 3 of those characters' backstories will start popping up, and you'll get a hint at what sort of dangers they had to deal with in the past. So yes, it's definitely on purpose that you don't see your face. There's definitely something to it, and it is something that I wanted to get readers excited about and get invested in the secrets behind, especially that character, but the others as well.
Good. Excellent. And I think that it does work. The way it's written, of course, the fantastic art, which we'll talk about in a moment. I'm intrigued.
Sure.
I'm incredibly intrigued about Dryad more than the rest of the characters even, but the rest of them, I like that you've already managed to build in one issue a kind of tension amongst the team and different relationships between them. There's tension, obviously, between Dino and Dryad. Which I love. I love the. but I also like it's very cool. I like it, but it's also we also talk about Cannonball and Zeno, and they seem to be on a lot more friendly relationship, kind of a not so antagonistic at this moment. So it's good building.
No, that was that was a, kind of an effort on my part, is getting the writing to feel complete and smooth and not too dialogue heavy. I wanted to get all that in the first issue so people knew where they stood with the characters, but not overwhelm them at the same time. So and keep the action moving. So it was definitely a balancing act that I'm getting better at, and next time around I'll have that stuff sort of established, so people, you know, I can focus on developing the plot and making things happen.
Cool. So that is, and that brings me to, I guess, my next question with regards to that. What would you, from a writer's perspective, in order to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish in the comic book, did you have to make any? Did you have to make any cuts? Did you have to go through and cut some stuff out and make it? How do you decide what works and what doesn't?
Yes, I definitely had to cut stuff. I had heard from some people, you know, prepare a whole bunch of stuff beforehand. I did that, but you got to realize that the first concept for the comic was made, 6 years ago, I think. So when I look back at some of these old scripts, I'm like, okay, I like these ideas, but this isn't going to work at all with this, with what I want to do now. This isn't up to the standard that I've set for myself. So I don't want to put anything out there. I want to make this as good as possible. So from here on out, it's basically new writing. I know what I want to do, but it's I just couldn't rely on those old scripts. So a lot of stuff got cut. A lot that, looking back, was very navel-gazy or angsty or too abstract. I wanted to focus on the action more. So I definitely had a lot.
Very good.
I've heard before that you don't want to get too attached to your work, and definitely that was in that category. I was able to look at it, thankfully, and say, no. Uh-uh. So.
Guess what, Marshall? Very good. Very good. I do want to point out, very good answer. You have the honor of actually getting our first listener question during the show.
Sure. Yeah, I'm glad to take it.
So, Marshall, and we haven't given our number out, but we have a caller in, David from the UK. For those who are interested in calling, our telephone number is 213-286-6720. Again, that's 213-286-6720. Probably Marshall will answer all sorts of questions. Interested to see how he answers this one. David just finished Neonomicon by Alan Moore, and he had he wanted to know if you had any comments on Cthulhu by H.P. Lovecraft. And David, I just hope I pronounced that correctly. You're on the air.
Cthulhu, yeah. It's that,
I don't
that
know.
Was,
go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering about future projects because a lot of Alan Moore's stuff is very edgy. Your stuff isn't quite as edgy as his. And I saw some panels in Neonomicon that I found quite shocking. I was wondering what your thoughts were about that.
My thought is that that's something I really don't want to touch. I think there might be someone who can handle that material well, but I don't think that's me. And Alan Moore's stuff in general is pretty controversial and, you know, noteworthy and that sort of thing. It's not really what I want to do, I don't agree with a lot of his style in general.
He kind of predicted the chemical attacks in Syria, and I just, you know, it was very specific about what would happen.
That is, you know, he might have some special insight, but I also know that he. I know he said that hallucinogens are a big part of his work. It's not really.
Yeah,
definitely. I know there's a lot of good Alan Moore stuff out there. I would go for that, but that's not something I want to touch. It's not something I agree with. So that would be my answer.
No.
Thank you, David,
okay.
Very much, sir.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
That's all right. Cheers. Thanks.
Right. Thank you very much.
I guess they're just there. It's definitely an interesting call. There's just all sorts of places. I suppose comics can open you to go into all sorts of different directions. I suppose that in the creative process, I suppose early on you sort of set, maybe boundaries is the wrong term, but you set your sort of purview of what it is that you want to focus on? Or do you think that over time you become more open to doing different things?
You know, I'm willing to play with the idea, but I to play with what I want to do, you know, but I'm kind of letting that evolve naturally. I don't want, for instance, to talk about other people's experiences that I don't know anything about. You know, that's a big hang-up for me, and I have a lot of friends who read comics who, you know, they're African-American, and they say, hey, this was handled really badly by this person who doesn't know anything about it. And the same thing with comics, you know, comics readers who are women, it's the same story. So I want to, when I do push myself into new areas, I want to know that I am able to do so well in a way that everyone can enjoy, and no one's going to feel like, well, this isn't for me. You know, this is push me to the side because it's supposed to be talking about me, but it's not. You know, so I do want to try new genres, new story methods, but you know, I want to do it carefully and do it well.
Well, you mentioned Alan Moore's controversy. I mean, absolutely, he is. I think I wanted to find out about you. You've said that Brian K. Vaughan and Grant Morrison, definitely more mainstream, shall we say, less controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess controversial in their own way. And I just started reading The Last Man. Very excited about that. And can you talk a little bit about the way that they write and think and how that's influenced you, or if you're trying to keep yourself at a distance from them while you're writing, and how hard or easy that is?
Well, I will say this. If I enjoy something, I'm not going to worry too much about what the author is, but definitely if it's a Brian K. Vaughan book, especially, that's the writing style I tend to admire, but I don't try to emulate it necessarily. I want to tell a good story and be able to say, you know, this is good, this is what I want to put out. I know that Brian K. Vaughan is actually, he's very popular, but he's also pretty controversial with some people. And I learned this because, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV. I learned this when I started talking about Brian K. Vaughan with comics fans who were Lost fans. And they said, it was terrible. It was a great show. It was great all the way into the end. And then the ending was just kind of, you know, a huge letdown. That he just kind of fell flat. But I think, you know, and maybe you feel the same way, I don't know. I think that he has a good balance, in comics at least, of characters, themes, and plot. So he doesn't get hung up on dialogue. And, you know, I'm actually going to bring Alan Moore back into it a bit. And another favorite of people's who is Joss Whedon. When I read a Joss Whedon comic, I think he gets a little too into the dialogue and dialogue for dialogue's sake. Whereas I think Brian K. Vaughan has a very good mix of dialogue driving the action. There's very few extra words laying around, and that's definitely something that I want to have in my work is, have the characters and the dialogue drive the action, which drives the characters.
I think that's a good idea. I think it's a good way to approach it.
Thank you. I hope so.
Do you have a favorite Grant Morrison, Brian K. Vaughan, either story or arc that you kind of look to as either a touchstone or something you talk about all the time when you talk about those guys?
Yeah, I do. I was talking with Jason a little bit before the show, and he's a big Marvel fan. And when he was growing up, that was what he was interested in. And same with me. I was big into X-Men, especially the animated series and all that. So when I picked up Brian K. Vaughan's Runaways, it had a little bit of that same feel. Brian K. Vaughan's Runaways is about a bunch of kids who realize that they are, one, that they have superpowers, and that they are the kids of supervillains. So they run away together and form their own little community. And it has that sort of mixed team, you know, motley crew of different viewpoints and different powers and oddballs having to work together. And definitely that is an X-Men vein, and also something that I ended up doing with Prairie City, just because I like it, you know. I think hopefully with my characters with Prairie City, I have a good mix of different powers, different backgrounds, and different ideas of different approaches, you know, different personalities. Hmm. So that's something I wanted to put out there. But yes, definitely Runaways with Brian K. Vaughan. When other people started taking it over, the writing just did not click with me anymore. So that's what I would go to.
And then as far as Grant Morrison?
Grant Morrison, I like his stuff, but I can't think of anything right now that is really jumping out at me as an all-time favorite.
Okay, fair enough. What would you say is something about his style that you really appreciate?
I think he has a pretty good balance of, again, strong characters, and dialogue that helps move things along. I think he's sometimes a little more prone to hanging out, let's say, having characters talk for a while, but not spend a little more time in the scene than I would have them spend time in a certain scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, filling in background, filling in whatever. I think that I'm a big fan of people, you know, when the plot is moving, show me. So if it's a flashback instead of a long conversation, yeah, definitely give me that. That's one of the reasons I don't like Alan Moore a whole lot. People tried to get me into Watchmen, and it was a little too much of a novel, especially, you know, you have long narrative bubbles filling a page, and then there were short stories after the sections. And I get that it was very well done. It was very well plotted. It all tied together beautifully, and I understand all that, but it did not keep me in the story. It took me right out. So I think, you know, if you want to write that, if you want to write comics for me, you gotta give the power to the artist and kind of take a back step as far as actual words on the page goes.
Yeah, I definitely get where you're going with that. That it's almost its own, you know, Watchmen is its own subgenre, isn't it? It doesn't really fit into. I think before Watchmen, the series that came out this last summer went a long way to trying to do what you're talking about, have more comic and less story. But it's because they already had they could trade on all the work from the book itself. I would call it a book, properly speaking, as you would say. A novel. In fact, it was ranked as a novel, right? So, I think I'm not as experienced with. The reason I'm asking about Grant Morrison is because I'm just starting to really read more of his stuff. The one that he just finished not that long ago, but he finished that run on Action Comics for New 52.
Okay.
I didn't know
no,
if you had a chance to read that.
No.
But
I did
but
not.
The one
I sorry, go ahead.
No. I was going to say the one that I'm most familiar with him is All-Star Superman, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed pretty much everything about that book. But I only read part of his Action Comics run, and I know Jason has some thoughts on it.
Well, I'm looking to hear him. I'm just, you know what, I cheated and I went to his Wikipedia article. The Invisibles is the one that I enjoyed by him the most.
The Invisibles, okay.
That would be, if you can pick it up, it's very distinctive, very, basically, and I'm sorry if I'm interrupting, and I'll try not to make it too long, but his Invisibles book was a huge inspiration for The Matrix. actually invited him to the set and showed them what they were doing, showed him panels that were, you know, that they were sort of recreating, especially with the capture of Morpheus and that sort of thing. And he's like, okay, great, go for it. And when the series didn't do so well, you know, and people asked him about it, he said, well, they should have stole from me more, so... so it he's a little smarmy about it, but I guess good natured in letting them do it. It's about a group of people that sort of like the Matrix, they're trying to break away from this system of control, of mental control, and it's very influenced by magic and supernatural and psychedelic sort of break from reality. There's a lot of time travel and spirits and otherworldly creatures. So it's a lot of fun. Definitely check it out.
I would agree. I actually have read that, Marshall, and I actually really enjoy The Invisibles as well. And it's also, it came out when we were a little younger, I think it's safe to say. Also very grown up. It's a very grown up story in a marketplace at the time that was very more marketed towards children. You could argue that, I think, but I think it was a very well thought out and adult book with some very interesting themes, and so I would agree with you. It's a fantastic work by Grant Morrison. So, absolutely, sir.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about what kind of books you like and how you like to kind of you like to give the bare minimum. I shouldn't say the bare minimum, but you like to give enough dialogue to tell the story, and then let the artist take over for you and do the rest. And so let me kind of segue that into talking about your artist on PCR number one and how you first of all went with him and how you as a creator get an artist to create your vision. Just give you a little preface there for listeners. The artist on the book is a gentleman by the name of Eric Adrian Marquez. He's worked with, is it Blue Water Comics? I believe that's correct.
Worked quite a bit with Blue Water Comics, yeah. And he has a few independent projects that are in the works, but that's mainly what he has published. Yeah, he has. He did the Conan O'Brien book. He did some stuff for the Michael Jackson Blue Water book. So he's out there for sure.
Yeah, and so what made you go? What made you work with this gentleman for as an artist, and how did you help? How did you work with him to create your vision?
It was sheer luck. He was a member of a martial arts group that I was with for several years, and I started talking to people in the group about this idea that I had, and I said, "Well, you should just talk to Eric. He's doing that for a living. He's breaking his way into comics now. You should see if he's interested." So that is how I met him. I was nervous as hell because I had nothing written or published before. I had some basic script and a lot of world building stuff, and you know, he somehow I got his interest, and he's like, okay, I like these themes, I like where you're going, now you know, keep going, and when you get a script we'll start talking. So you'll see the first five pages of PCR, the Prairie City Response number one, are a big break from the rest of the comic. That's because those were the five-page samples that we were trying to get ready, and all the other art is a few years more recent. So, you know, the main thing was trying to figure out how I was going to pay him. I have, you know, I'm in a single-income family. It was, you know, it's always been a big deal. So that's when we had eventually did a Kickstarter, and we were able to get the whole thing funded, and we went from there. But yeah, I met him through happenstance. He has a really distinctive style. It's been cool seeing it develop. But definitely, I had to learn to work with an artist at all, and that's a whole. It's a big process, and it's something you can't overlook. You can't, you can't expect them to read your mind at any level at all. So you have to put it in there and get it, you know, get them what they need the first time so that you're both not frustrated and trying to go back and forth and fix things. So, but he's been patient through all that, thank goodness.
Very good. Do you plan on continuing to work with Mr. Marquez on any further publishing with Prairie City, or are you going to be working with different artists, or how do you plan on working with your art in the upcoming issues?
I think we are going, the plan is to stay with the three-person team. We brought in Jeremy Moeller to help finish up the colors for Prairie City number one, which he did, and they're amazing. Jeremy Moeller, if you look him up, he's done a lot of... He has done some more published stuff. He's been out there for a while. He has a lot of experience, and he is really, really great to work with. So, I really respect him a lot. Even though he's a new addition to the team, but we're going to keep that team through the 4-issue run for the graphic novel, and then from there we'll kind of see. At that point we're hoping the series will have enough momentum that we can say, okay, we can keep working on this, or if you guys are ready to do your own things, then that's good too. I'll be working with Eric, and I'll be working with Jeremy for the next 3 issues.
Very good.
For sure.
Very good. Steven, I believe you have a question about Kickstarter.
Sure.
Are you with me, Steven? I'll keep going, and we'll let Steven jump in when he's ready for that question. He's trying to put them together. That's okay.
No, I'm sorry. I had an issue with my mic. I was going to ask about Kickstarter itself, because interested in entrepreneurship and how that works. Was that at all intimidating? Was there a thought that if we don't get funded, I'm not going to be able to do the project? And how did you go about making it successful? Because there are so many Kickstarters that are not successful.
I gotta say, I could have done a lot of things better with the Kickstarter. A lot of things I should have planned better. A lot of other things. I got through a lot. I got some good donations from my family, for sure. But I also got a lot of interest from people who just, I never heard of. It was totally new to me. I think one thing that helped us reach our goal is that I kept the cost as low as I possibly could. I kept it down to the what I was going to need to pay the artist and what I was going to need to get things printed. But there was definitely a period in there where donations stopped coming in, and I was like, what are we going to do? I don't know who else to contact. I felt like I was harassing people on social media, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be that guy. I think I might have been there for a little bit. But I think it's not really professional. It set people off. But hopefully I didn't chase too many people away. Honestly, I think that we got over 60%, and then we hit the last week, if I'm remembering correctly, and then things started picking back up, and we exceeded our goal by a little bit.
Week you get featured on the campaign's, ending soon, and maybe that brought that attention to some people. Do you think that you're going to use the platform again to fund another project?
I may. What our plan is to do, we want to do a Kickstarter for issue 2, and I'm getting that ready now. Hopefully in a month or two that'll be ready to go. And I'm either going to use Kickstarter or Indiegogo or possibly a widget that's on my website, marshalledwards.net. So we'll kind of see how that goes. I think it worked. I think this time, I know what I'm doing a lot better. We'll have things better organized, and it'll run a lot smoother. I felt bad because we went over our deadline by several months. We're still working on getting the prints made, or basically getting made this week to send out. So it's been a year since the thing ended, and I'm not proud of that. I'm not proud of that, but I'm hoping that people will give me leeway for this being my very first, entrepreneurial project ever. And everyone was very gracious in giving, even people that I knew passingly or not at all have been very patient, happy for us. And, I couldn't ask for better. So it's been a good experience, but it was definitely nerve-wracking.
Sure.
And yeah. So I'm looking forward to the next one, and I'm looking forward to doing it right, for sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm sure it's intimidating to try to get all of those demands put together on a Kickstarter. And as you said, there are people who don't know you from Adam, who are clicking on, they're interested in comics. I funded a science fiction movie in the UK done by a bunch of students up in Glasgow. And they're behind schedule by a couple months. It's called, I should give a little shout out, it's a Shift 17. You can find them on Kickstarter. But I think going into it, if we're funding a Kickstarter project, we're willing to give lots of leeway because we know that you're trying to do this on your own. So I think there's that element of understanding that you're talking about, the fact, let's say it's a year late, they know where you quote unquote live on the internet. It's not like you're going to run off somewhere. And I think there's a built-in patience behind funding Kickstarter projects, but it's also a labor of love. We know that we're all little pieces of trying to get you going where you need to go. So I'm glad it worked for you. I hadn't had a chance to pick up the finished product myself. I'm going to try to do that this next week. Great that you're going to use it again. Or there's a self-starter widget that you can put on. It takes a little bit more back-end work to do that. But in any case, you can still get to leverage that crowd source potential, which is great.
And, I don't mean to get too businessy if that's not the focus of the blog. The reason I'm considering it is that I do have the other projects I'm going to launch soon. I have a short story, a serial short story that I did that's horror-based, and it does pull a little bit on the Cthulhu legacy of alternate realities and psychological terror, and I'm not going to go too much more into it. But I'm going to have that illustrated by an up-and-coming horror sci-fi artist whose work I saw on Twitter, and we started talking. But that would be the idea of having that on my blog, is because I might have more than one thing going at a time. I might want to cross-promote. It's like, hey, if you like this, this is what I'm doing next. Or I get people looking me up for different reasons, and I want to, sort of redirect them to other things of mine that they might like. So,
I think when you look at it we have to look at it from a business standpoint a little bit in terms of just what we're talking about today. It's working towards a self-publishing.
Right.
It's not simple as somebody who quote unquote worked or contracted in with one of the big publishers. And that actually brings me to a question I think I'd like to talk to you about, and this might be a long conversation, and that's okay, but I'd like, as an independent creator at this point, what is your viewpoint on comic books in general, how the status of the industry today, maybe particularly from the two big publisher standpoint? What's your thoughts on that, on how they do their work, how they treat their artists?
I had a whole bunch prepared on this, and I am happy to talk about it. I'm also just realizing that I may make a whole lot of enemies because there's a lot of fans of a lot of stuff that's out there. But there is I think the big two are at a really, Marvel and DC, and I apologize for not going into alternate comics and indie comics right now. Those are awesome, from web comics to, the littlest one-person thing. There's a whole lot out there, and there are people really who are doing masterful things with the comic book form. If you go to gunshowcomic.com, that's one of my favorite. Casey Green, his stuff is amazingly paced, very sparse, and you're never going to see it in Marvel or DC. But I think comics are an interesting place for Marvel and DC because a few years ago, DC was really at the top of its game as far as I'm concerned. The original 52 had just come out, and all those stories were amazing new spins on old characters. You know, and there was you know, the Question arc, the Black Adam arc. Everything about it was either pretty damn good or amazing, and they had a very good depth of character. They were making drastic changes very well, as far as I'm concerned, and they were willing to experiment with these characters, which I give them a lot of credit. That's something that I think that Marvel and DC at that time were willing to take risks with their characters, both of them, and Marvel still does that. You know, they're, I actually have the Gambit series. That's one of the series I get every month, and it's, you know, I pick it up, and I'm not too worried about going in order because it's kind of, there's some intrigue, but it's also punchy and fun, and, you know, I don't see DC doing that as much anymore with the new 52. I think they've really narrowed their focus, and they've narrowed their audience. So I don't think they're trying, you know, if you've been following the news with them lately, they made some changes to Batwoman that, you know, made the team walk. And Batwoman has been just about the only thing in the new 52 that I've absolutely loved and, you know, that I've gotten all the time, and I've canceled it because I think they went the wrong way with the character. She was proposed to be married. You know, she proposed to her girlfriend. And the script that they had planned for over a year, and this is J.H. Williams the III, and Blackman is the other guy's last name. They had this planned out for over a year about how it was going to unfold. And then at the last minute, the people in charge said, no, we're not doing that. That's never going to happen. And that and some recent stuff with Harley Quinn. You know, I think they're handling old characters that people have loved for a long time in a way that excludes a lot of people from enjoying those characters. And I think that, you know, more power to them, but I think those people are going to start going, you know, those fans are going to start going somewhere else. Whereas Marvel, from what I see, is able to take more risks. You know, throw diverse characters into a bag and shake them up and see what happens. And I love that. I love that they're able to do that. And I see DC really limiting its storytelling and its audience. So I'm kind of disappointed with that. I think, too, there's a lot of crossover between animated shows, TV shows, and comics right now. And I kind of like seeing that. You know, Bravest Warriors and Adventure Time comic books, and regular show has a comic book now, which I think, you know, Casey Green has a part in that too. So I like seeing that. I like, you know, I like people trying new things in the medium. So I'm excited for the future.
Yeah.
I am excited.
I would agree with you on a lot of those points, Marshall. I think, I would agree on the DC front, and this is, and I know we have the perception sometimes, especially me, of being biased against DC. Certainly not. These characters are even before Marvel, I knew who Superman and Batman were, and I loved them. But we also, now that we've gotten older, begin to appreciate what we see here, and we want more risk taking with that. I would think it's safe to say, in some cases, Batwoman in particular was never really going to be a children's comic book. It's something that they had to protect the children from that book. That was always a very mature book.
It was always very dark, and I respected that so much. But go ahead.
Yeah, I can understand that concern coming from if they wanted to do that kind of a storyline with Batman. I can understand it. I may not agree with it, but I can understand it because it's one of the more marketable characters. Batwoman, not questioning the writing or anything like that, but we would say arguably tier two, maybe even tier three in terms of what they got there. Not because it was a bad book, but because it was something that maybe people didn't pay as much attention to, and it was a fantastic book. And I'm not going to say it's not going to be now, but it certainly is going to be. I can agree that it's the decisions they've made are going to color our decisions going forward, I think. We're going to think this is not what it was supposed to go. we know what they were wanted to do. And the way the original decision, and I'm not going to spoil too much about it, but basically the story, all the book was going to lead to that story point. And now it's just gone.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, well, that was the natural conclusion. Now what are we going to do? And I think that's why that came up. Like, this is not, as an artist, how would you, as an artist, let's say Marvel or DC came to you tomorrow and says, we want to publish PCR, but you got to do it by our rules. What would you think about that? How would you handle that?
Okay, that's a really good question. DC, I would not be able to, with good conscience, work with them with my characters. Working with their own characters, I might be able to, but again, I have certain morals and standards as a creator that might cause me to walk the same way that J.H. Williams did. But at Marvel, like I said, they have more leeway with their characters. Things are a lot more flexible. There was a Hellcat series a couple of years ago that I loved. And it was stupid. It was kind of frivolous, but it was fun and punchy and action-filled, and they took that risk and they put it out there. And if they could somehow see a way to put the elements that I have into their stories, into their universe, well, okay, I'll think about it. But mainly, you know, I don't want to do that before I'm able to show what the PCR world really is. Before it's really established, that's my first goal, is to make it memorable, make it a complete thing, and then, you know, maybe in 4 issues, maybe in 8, and then say, okay, you know, if you guys want to do something with this, we can start talking. But I don't want to rob myself of that chance. Is what I think.
I
agree.
With DC Marshall, I don't know if you ever listened to our show, but we sort of spoke about Forever Evil in a very short segment, and we'll have our DC show later this month, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about it. I just since the New 52, I just keep getting let down. It's just a series of letdowns. And I hold on to my sort of core characters. And it's hard, too, because, you know, we're hosting a comic book podcast, so we're trying to be agnostic about the studios and what they're doing. And so we're not trying to say, oh, we're a Marvel show or a DC show. We're like, look, we read everything and we want to comment on it. But it's hard to not be completely disappointed by what DC continues to do to themselves, especially, you know, given, with Aquaman and Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is one of my favorite books, period. Brian Azzarello's and Cliff Chang's run on Wonder Woman right now is legendary, and I think it's going to be one of the best runs in the history of the character. But
I
think it's just accidentally at DC. It's because Wonder Woman is a legacy DC character. But that kind of book belongs at Marvel, where the character is given a chance to explore a variation on an origin story, where the quote-unquote strong woman character doesn't have to live up to some Batwoman stereotype. And I think the reason why I'm not that moved on the Batwoman issue is because DC always awkwardly fumbles these things, like the whole transgender Barbara Gordon roommate thing. It's like, well, if you're trying to work it into the story, like, well, we need to make this happen, well, sure, it might come off fairly awkwardly, or you might get stage fright at the end and say, oh, well, we're not going to do that because, you know, we're DC. That's because you're letting an agenda drive the story instead of letting the story drive the agenda. And I just don't think stories come first at DC. And when they do, it's accidentally, because the book is being written very well. Like I said, Aquaman accidentally at DC right now. Wonder Woman is accidentally at DC. I don't think I'll be forever upset at Forever Evil, but I'm not particularly excited about it.
Right.
So when you think about that, don't worry about alienating people. We don't want you to not give your true opinion on it. I'm a little bit more intrigued as to whether you're still following X-Men from your loving it in your youth. Do you follow any of the X-Men titles now?
I gotta say, well, there's Gambit. But in general, heck no. And the problem was, when I was a kid, there was the animated series, which was it had a concrete starting point, and it went from there with the same characters. When I tried to get into the actual comics, I was coming into the middle of things. I didn't know what was going on or who people were. There wasn't Wikipedia or anything like that where I could look it up. So I felt really lost, and I just didn't feel like, well, okay, maybe this is for people who have been here for a long time, and it's not for me. And I just couldn't follow the stories. But, I did follow the world a lot as a kid. I got the trading cards, and I learned who the people are. I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds really cool. I have no idea how to find that comic, but, with Mojo and Longshot, how do I find that run? Well, I don't know. I guess I'll just watch more TV. But back in the present day, I do follow the Uncanny Avengers right now, which has been interesting. And again, it hinges on stuff that I don't know enough about. Doomsday and his Kang and his children or something. And the Scarlet Witch thing, I sort of understand. It's not to say it hasn't been fun, and the artwork is really great, but I'm lost. That's the thing with having these characters run for so long and having them do so many things. Is can't keep up. So I don't worry about it. I just follow the stories that I can enjoy.
It's a good rule of thumb. I think if we're going to bash on DC, that's something I'd like to say about Marvel in that regard. In that, even when we look at Marvel Now, which is allegedly, it's not the new 52 for Marvel, we swear, it's a good jumping on point. I appreciate that Marvel didn't get rid of the continuity that happened, but I think you speak to exactly what the issue is. Sometimes there's so much continuity, even in a new book, in this case on Marvel's side, from that point, it's still difficult. There are several books they've done that are not like that. If you enjoy Uncanny Avengers, Marshall, if you're not, you may want to check out Captain America. It's the same writer, but it does leave a lot of continuity behind. I will say that. But I think on the X-Men side, sometimes Marvel's guilty of being very continuity heavy, and also being very, very, they oversaturate that side. You know, just like the Avengers now, some would argue oversaturation. I think Steven would agree with that one. There's 47 X-Men books, and it goes on and on. What do you pick? It's difficult.
I don't know. As far as backstory goes, I can go for basically if their backstory boils down to we got beat and we're going to fight, I can get into that. But if there's, if you follow like Deadpool, that's kind of all that happens. I was following Deadpool there for a while, and he bumps into people, and stuff happens, and, we got beef because I'm me and you're Deadpool, and we're going to shoot each other for a while, and that's fine. I don't have the time or the willpower to read all the histories or the interest. So. Yeah.
And that's a challenge. That's a challenge I think we face, the comic book market as a whole faces today, if they want to try to draw in new readers. Right? I mean, we have to find something that they can get in on the ground level. Again, something like why earlier, it's nice to get in on Prairie City Response at ground level. There's something that happened before, we know that, but it's not. You don't need to know that yet. We're going to find out more about that as the book goes, and I like that kind of storytelling. And I think Marvel, in some of their books, has a lost opportunity there with some of the Marvel Now relaunches that could really have really brought in a few new readers, and at this point they probably did for an issue or two. Then they're like, I just don't get it. What's with Kang's twins, the Apocalypse twins, and Kang, and who are these people? And I do it. I understand it, but I've been reading for years. Marvel Now is more like it's for us who've been reading for a long time. It doesn't feel like in some books that it's for new readers. So that's one. I think that's a more challenge. Just take a quick pause here and let everybody know you're listening to the Culture of Comics podcast on the AMDG Radio Network. Today, of course, are talking with Marshall Edwards, the creator of Prairie City Response. I am Jason Frazier, my co-host Stephen Heiner with me as always. And we've talked about kind of the creation process and our thoughts about the industry in general so far today. So We'll just keep on moving on forward here. What, and this is, I like to kind of do these, this question, because we've talked quite a bit about some of the challenges they may face over DC and Marvel. What kind of challenges do you, have you faced in creating your own independent comic book? What kind of challenges did you, I mean, obviously we talked about the Kickstarter. What challenges did you face?
Well, just, I guess the main challenge is myself, and like I said, I threw out a lot of my old materials that I thought was good because I had read a lot more at that point, and I decided, you know, I just can't, this isn't me, I can't publish this, this isn't my best. So getting over myself in that respect, also, you know, getting out of my own way to learn how to communicate better with the artist, say, you know, I want it to look like this from this point of view, you know, moving from left and right in this way, you know, silhouette this, to make that clear so that they're not frustrated, so that the there's so much content that comes through in the art. And communicating that is an art form that I've had to learn, and it'll probably change as I work with different people. You know, everyone has their own style. The other big thing has been publicity. Without a publisher, getting attention for the comic, letting people know what it's about, has, you know, it's a struggle, and I've resigned myself to, and that sounds bad, it's not really like that, but I have refocused myself not on monetary success or popularity, but getting something done that I am just really proud of, and that if I, you know, if I'm working with other people, that they are, you know, proud to show off and say, this, I made this, you know, I worked on this world. It was, you know, a great experience, and I, you know, I love these characters. I want, you know, for the other characters that are, you know, the other creators that I work with to come away excited and want to come back. You know, that's a big part of it. And, so, you know, I'm focusing on that, and publicity is the next big step, but I think that if I do what I can, don't stress about the rest, and focus on getting new content out there, I think that's the right way to go.
Interesting. You know, Marshall, you're a writer at the end of the day, and one of the classic problems that, you know, any writer faces is writer's block. You know, how do you, how often do you run into this? Do you have a special Swami method to get out of it, to share with other people who may be, who are interested in following what you're doing, doing it themselves perhaps, and dealing with that issue?
I think there are a few different writing methods out there that work for different people. For me, I have a lot of projects in my back pocket. That if I fall behind on anything, if I just wake up and, you know, if I sit down to write, I'm like, I don't want to write that. I jump onto another project and, you know, something else that I've been working on. And the nice thing, and maybe this is just because I'm not, you know, published and I don't have, I mean, I am published, but not being hired and I don't have deadlines and that sort of thing. The nice thing about writing is that I can do whatever I want. Writer's block. Sometimes you're just not ready to write. Don't get stressed out about it. And when you are ready to write, and you're having trouble, write something else. Work on that other project that you've been dreaming about, and don't give yourself too many restrictions, especially when you're starting out. Just keep going, keep writing, keep getting content that you're going to one day be ready to show people, and don't frustrate yourself too much. So that's my best advice.
Okay. Fair enough. And to the I just want to circle back to the question about, you know, we were talking about the current books. I was, when we were at Comic-Con, and I was trying to get, you know, I was at the DC panel, I was at the Marvel panel, I was trying to get a feel for, you know, what do the writers read? And I really got the sense that they didn't like admitting that they didn't have as much time to read because, you know, they're in comics, you know, this is what they got into it for, but when you start writing, you don't get as much time to read. Same thing, Jason and I, before we started this podcast, I probably listened to more comic podcasts, but I have to do enough work to get ready for our podcast and make sure that we're ready to discuss our topics. I don't have as much time to listen to those podcasts as much. So do you feel that, ironically, that writing comics has cut into your comic enjoyment time because now it's work?
Oh, definitely, definitely. It's cut down to my leisure time in general. I kind of gear myself towards if I'm going to do something fun, it's usually not related to literature right now, or it's even a comic book feels like an investment of 30 minutes, and that seems like a long time now, you know, because I have projects that I want to keep developing. So your whole view of time definitely changes. What do you focus on? How do you divvy out that time? So yes, I totally understand where they're coming from. I have between my wife and I, we have six or seven series that are that we subscribe to, but we are months behind on just haven't even cracked the covers. I've looked through them, you know, just to read a little bit, but you know, they're out of sequence, they're everywhere in the house, it doesn't feel like there's a way to put aside the time just to get it done. So I understand. Yeah, it feels like, yeah, definitely. Definitely know where they're coming from.
Can we ask what your core line, you know, books are that you absolutely can't let a month go by without picking one up? You said Gambit originally.
Yeah. Gambit is really fun. Batwoman has been one. I do have Wonder Woman still, but I think I'm a year behind on it. I think Brian K. Vaughan's Saga has been great, but I'm also 6 months behind on it. So I love these books. They are, especially, you know, Saga. They are awesome, and I can't talk to you about them because I have no clue what's going on because I haven't been there.
And
know?
we won't spoil anything for you.
That's great. No, that's what I have going on as far as subscriptions go.
I'm with you. I love Saga. I love it, love it, love it. It's a great book.
It's been great. Yeah. Go ahead.
Fantastic. Let me ask you this, and we're talking about, of course, how it can cut into your leisure time. What do you think? Do you think that writing comic books now? I know you get a fulfillment from an artistic perspective, but do you think the creation of comic book takes away from your love of it in general, or do you love it more as a result?
Oh no, I love it. I love it more. Seeing a story come to life is huge for me. Like I said, I always I was with these. You know, I had a Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games group when I was, you know, a kid to kind of mid-20s. And especially when I was a teenager, I would always try to be the DM or the GM and tell this great story. And it would always, you know, fall apart in the mechanics and I would get frustrated. So to come back to storytelling, to gain confidence as a writer and has been a big deal, and no, comics are awesome. I'm most excited about following other people on social media who are also breaking into the industry, and they're doing great things, and their artwork is fantastic, and they're going to their first cons, and they're starting to blow up, and it's amazing. And as far as reading comics goes, I do it the most online now, web comics of all sorts of types. Because, you know, it's one page or it's half a page or or it's three panels, you know. I can get it out of the way. I can do it as I want. That's what I do the most these days. But, I love it more. And especially with those comics or on Tumblr or whatever, you learn a lot about the craft and about what works and what doesn't work and what is just boring to look at and what excites you, even if it's very, very simplistic. So yeah, you learn more about creators and what they want to do, and you look at it a different way. You look at not just was this a good comic book, but where's the artist coming from? Who is this writer? Who is this person, and why do they want to put this out there? And that's a lot of fun for me. So yeah, it's definitely intensified it.
Very good. So obviously it's very challenging to get yourself to get started in the industry. I think most of what stops a lot of people is just trying to stick with it. It's easy to get discouraged, I would think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So with that being said, what would you offer as advice for someone who wants to start their own independent comic book or just get the ideas out there?
If you're a writer, get an artist that'll work with you, and if that means paying him, you'll have to find a way to pay him. I actually went through several years with Eric where he was doing a sample for me for free, and it didn't happen because he had to feed his family. You know, his wife is a freelance artist too, and they've got kids, so it's he would make progress on it every few months, but that the Kickstarter was the big thing for that. So if you are just a writer, get something out there. Get a 5-page sample out there. Get some short stories, without art out there. Even if you're just connecting with a couple fans through your blog or a couple other creators, that can mean a big difference when it's time to get your work out there. If you're an artist, I've seen a lot of artists do concept work, and that's awesome, but they never go forward to tell a story. And that is a killer. You got to take that leap. You got to show that you can show sequential art, and you can drive a story from the beginning to the end. So even if it's 5 pages or whatever, tell your own little story. And if you're doing all comics, then I think that quantity is your best ally, because you can update every week or as often as you need, and that will get you attention too, and you start making connections. So you got to finish that one thing before you can take on bigger projects, and it'll build your confidence. It'll build, even if it's just a couple of fans, it'll start building a fan base, and you need to start out small and then start snowballing it. So that's my advice.
Marshall, did you ever feel that you, I guess this is a two-part question, did you ever feel an onus or a pressure to also be an artist, because there are some people who maybe they have a better writing ability than artistic ability. It's very hard to do both very well, right? And then my follow-up to that is, that the answer is definitely no. And is there like a Craigslist where you can like find artists, like an equivalent where you can kind of put out there and say, I'm looking for this kind of artist, or is it all usually referrals?
I'm going to answer the second part of your question first, because just because that's the one that's fresh in my head. I think that you have to I think there are a lot of places where you can meet other artists and creators, but involvement in those networks and getting attention in any network, even if it's face-to-face, relies on you having something to show. So get that first project done, and you socialize all along, and I think some people have a really cutthroat attitude, and they're able to make those connections and cement them and do it before they even have much out there. But if it's a struggle for you, just talk to who you like, find any sort of community. Don't worry about who it is, how prestigious they are. But if they like your type of stuff and they like, they like what you're putting out and you like what they're putting out, that's the perfect place for you. And then once you have you can put your resume on the table and say, this is published, or this is ready to go, these stories are out there, people will start to look to you. I think, and this is almost going to sound cynical. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there at all because it is kind of cynical. So, but
okay.
I,
so it's
I,
a it's
I
a it's a new 52 here. We're just rebooting Marshall's answer.
Yes.
Go ahead and try
that
again.
Right. just don't. You know, just baby steps. Baby steps in everything. If it's too hard and you don't feel like you can communicate in a way that other people are communicating about their work, just find your own way to communicate. Don't try to compete. Don't, you know, just go towards the things that you like and the people you like, and they'll do the same to you, and have them to show. And I forgot the first part of your question. So.
I was going to say, do you feel like there's a pressure on writers to have some kind of element of being able to be an artist as well? Or, you know, do you feel like people are like, hey, I'm a writer, I'm an artist, you know, never the twain shall meet. Did you ever feel like if you weren't, that I needed to develop this ability? I'm a very much a stick figure person. I write well, but I know that I could never be an artist. I'm not to say I couldn't work on it, but it won't ever get to the level of craft, especially today. I mean, art today makes, you know, art from the golden age, silver age, just, I don't want to say look clownish, that's disrespectful, but it just makes it, it's just night and day. It's night and day. And you're not, you know, I'm never going to get up to that level, so focus on my writing instead. What was that like for you? Did you ever have a desire to be an artist, or was there any talent there that you wanted to develop?
There was, but I never knew what I wanted to write or what I wanted to draw. I think I always wanted to draw stuff that had a story to it, but I never thought of doing my own alt comics or whatever. I did a few things when I was in high school, and generally, though, I got more comfortable just writing something in a conversational style and getting it out there. The people I think are the most amazing in the whole comics, you know, in the whole comics universe are people who can do both. And it doesn't matter if they're doing little cartoon figures or if they're doing more standard, you know, full-figure comic book stuff with intricate backgrounds and all that. But if they can do it all, that is amazing, and I bow to them. But yeah, there was a while, especially earlier this year, where I was just like, man, I need to be my own artist because things are not going the way I want them to, and I need to do that. But it was just this whole other mountain that I wasn't really ready to climb. So I just I let it go, and I'm fine being the writer and illustrating with words. You know, that's what I try to do with my short stories and stuff. So, I guess other people can judge of that. You know,
very good.
That actually works or not. So,
it's
cool.
Well, I think it's difficult to accept the limitations, so to speak, and say, you know, I'm just not an artist. That's not me. But it's
right.
From a writer perspective, and this is nothing against artists. I think artists are fantastic, but from a writing perspective, it can often seem more difficult. You two, good writers. Me, I try. I can't do it. I can draw nicely, decently, but I cannot write. And so I think that's kind of something you can't really teach. And so, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. I think if I do learn to be an artist, it's going to be for me, and it's going to be 20 years from now when I have a lot of free time and I'm just on, you know, I can start showing people doodles I've done and stuff like that and build from there. You know, it's not, I'm not interested in doing it competitively. And like you said, most of the people I find in the industry have one or they have the other. They have a ton of characters they've designed, but they don't, you know, they're not confident in writing them, or they have 4 or 5 episodes of something written, but no way to make it happen. It's not a comfortable fit, and comics are always going to be that way. You know, there's always going to be a bridge there, I think, but I could be wrong. So.
I don't know. I think you're probably right about that. So
yeah.
So
yeah,
let's
let me take it back to Prairie City Response for the last parts of our conversation here. I'm sure they're the lengthy parts, but the last parts. Before I do that,
sure.
Do you have anything, any other you want to share from your creation process that we haven't gotten into? Anything that you'd like to just get out there for those who maybe are interested in the creative side of this? If
okay.
not, it's okay.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I had to do in the whole process was learn how to listen to the artist. Learn how to give Eric what he needed and understand what problems he was having with what I was doing. I think it's easy when you're the creator to put a capital C there, you know, and say, I'm the writer, you know, this is mine. And you want to do things your own way, and when it doesn't line up, you know, I think there's you got to let go of that tendency to, you know, it is your story, but what is exactly in your head is not going to go there. So you need to let the artist surprise you. And that was the biggest thing out of finishing up number one, is that so many things turned out amazing that I, between Eric and Jeremy, they put so much depth into things that I didn't, that wasn't there for me when I was first imagining it. They really blew me away. So I, if you're a writer, respect your artists, you know, have limits, definitely have boundaries, like in any relationship. But let them do what they do best. And if they have a suggestion or a change, entertain it, you know, if it's not the end of the world. I think we have a good team, and I'm really looking forward to finishing this story arc and getting it out there. So yeah, I don't
All
think
right.
I'm ever going to go into the hardcore Neonomicon stuff of Alan Moore. That's not where this one's going to go. But there will be a lot of plot twists, some dark stuff, some really dark, just some disturbing situations that people are put in, and that's where if there is a horror element to Prairie City's Response, that is going to be what it's all about, is the choices people have to make and the consequences for something that may not even be something they've done, you know, paying for something that's not their fault. So I think that's plenty dark. That's plenty dark for me. That's my realm for now.
Marshall, speaking of dark, when I was just looking at the panels, as I said, Jason's had a chance to actually pick up and read this. I've just only had a chance to see some panels. The person with the mask, I know it just the first thing I thought of when I saw that was it was evocative of Donnie Darko for me. I mean, less of course the ears, but I was thinking like that's the first place where my mind went when I saw that sort of face and that sort of non-threatening, observant character. I thought, oh, that was sort of interesting. And then I went on to read a little bit more about the pitch and the story. But I don't know if Donnie Darko played any had any sort of dark influence there while we're on the dark theme.
Well, not consciously, not at all. If you're talking about the blue skin character, that's an alien, and that is actually what is a mask. That's actually the bone of his face, and he has a bony fin on his head. Probably because I like dinosaurs is why that got in there. he actually that is a fun story. I needed a third member for my team. When I was getting the story ready. And I just had this weird vision of this creature that turned into that species of alien. So it's been interesting. But if you're talking about Dryad, the woman character, her mask went through a lot of different changes. And actually, that was a surprise. Not a surprise, but Eric evolved it a lot and came out with this. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that. That looks practical, which does reflect her character, and it evoked this seriousness and mystery that definitely, you know, she's supposed to be a closed book or a closed window. You can't, you know, that's definitely what she's what she has going on. So I again in character, even in character design, the artists are going to have ideas that are going to really bring your characters to life. If it, you know, within limits, you know, you don't want to give away too much to them. But
okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Excellent. So let me ask you. Like I said, I want to talk a little bit about Prairie City Response. I want to get a little bit more information about it before we decide we're going to wrap up for the day. We'll go a little further. And so, what can you tell us? I know that there's an element in this book, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. Probably not, because I think you already mentioned it. But there's an element of mm-hmm. racism a little bit, right? And it's evocative of X-Men, maybe the Alien Nation movie, obviously very intentional. Is that going to be something that plays a bigger part in a story that goes, or is it just an element that's in the background?
It does play a bigger part of the story as it goes. Similar to the way there's a hook at the end of issue one leading to the next story, at the end of issue two, there's another hook, and it does look a little more closely at all of this. And it's definitely about discrimination and racism and immigration. You know, I think in the U.S. we tend to think of immigration as a just here problem, but it's, you know, all over the world, people are being displaced and packing up and you know, moving to where the jobs are. So. And there's some pretty, you know, horrible things that happen. So I thought that if I, you know, I already had the aliens in the setting and they were already immigrants, and I was like, well, maybe I'll run with that and do something with that. But that's definitely there. It's definitely there with Cannonball and the way he presents himself. He comes across as, you know, he has a pretty rough history, but he is also a nice person. And it's that nice person aspect that I think, and maybe I'm giving too much away, but that he feels he's allowed to put out there. You know, that if he puts out something else, then it's going to be taken badly, and you know. So it is something I want to talk about. It is something that I hope I can do justice in the story without detracting from the actual story. I think that even if you have a platform, your first duty is to tell an entertaining story. So even if you have something you want to put out there, social message wise, entertain first, or it's
good.
You know, gonna suck.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Good one.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, you know what I find interesting about the book is that Cannonball is, I don't want to say the most likable, because they're likable characters, but he's the most kind character you see in there. The person who is the alien, who isn't one of us, to the side, is the most relatable from a nice guy perspective.
Oh yeah, he really is. I mean, that's not. It is who he's putting out there, but it's also who he really is. He is the most mature member of the group. The aliens have a longer lifespan, so he's quite a bit older than the other two. He's had a life before that. When I looked at what I was writing for the character and looked for influences of other things I've seen, Jet Black from the series Cowboy Bebop is who came to mind. He's sort of, you know, he's big, bulky, frighteningly strong, but he's also level-headed and caring and mission-focused, and he sort of was the you know, I'm going back to, you know, 90s anime, which is not something we've mentioned at all. But anyway, he was the person who kept the main character in line and kind of kept the group together as it became a group. So I think that's kind of his role, and it may change. You know, I want it to evolve as it feels natural. So I don't want to pigeonhole him, but that's definitely where he is right now. He's the he's the glue of the group, even though he's the outcast. So he definitely has an important role to play, but it's precarious because of who he is. So
very interesting. Very cool. I like him. I'm a big fan of the character. I think he might be my favorite character out of the series so far.
He's very likable. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of it. Now, I don't want to spoil too much because before we finish today, we're going to tell our listeners where they can pick up PCR number one. But so I don't want to spoil what happens in the story or some of the setup per se, but let me ask you this. The creation of the scar and, of course, the situation of one of the heroes prior to the story, are we going to find out what happened with that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's going to play a bigger part. And even though I started... Well, he wasn't that character was not the original focus of this whole concept, but I
sure.
started going into his background as well, and it's going to come into play, especially his relationship with his father, which is very, very introductory, very lightly introduced in issue
yeah.
one. So
very good. Very good. So before we get into a couple other little things, so let me ask you this. What can you tell us about what's upcoming in PCR and in Prairie City Response?
Sure. Like I said, we're going to be going into the three main characters. The obstacles they overcame to get to where they are going to come back and start messing with their lives once again. Some of the social problems in the setting are going to start to come to a head. They're hinted at. Some groups that were sort of very, very background in issue one are going to start coming back to the foreground, and that's going to cause problems too. And in issue two, they make their first enemy, and it's about facing their... I can't give too much away, but they... It's a very interesting sequence, and it's very long and dynamic, and then we kind of go back into developing the story after that in the aftermath. So it's whereas we had some action in issue one, issue two is going to be a big fight, and it's going to sort of presage the turmoil that's to come in their personal lives and in their social world. So, there you go.
Thank you, sir. A little exclusive preview somewhat of what's going to happen in Prairie City Response and the upcoming issues. Now, Marshall, before I go into kind of a wrap-up and everything like that, I want to ask you, what other projects are you working on? What else have you got down the pipeline here?
Sure. On my website, you will find a short story collection called Mayfly. I have sections 1 through 5 on the website, and it's that horror short story series that I was talking about. The versions that are on the website are pretty rough, but I wanted to get them out there and get people looking at them. I'm going to rewrite that whole story, and it is going to be illustrated by Dennis Coyle. Second, if you look him up on Twitter, he is at Brain Divide, but his stuff is really interesting. He's got some really cool methods he's experimenting with very watery-looking inks, and so it gives a very dynamic, murky look to the art, which is going to reflect the sort of arcane, otherworldly elements that are in. No, not arcane's the wrong word, but definitely paranormal elements that are in the story. So I am going to launch a fundraiser for that sometime in the next few months. And basically, it's just going to be bare bones, and it's going to be help me pay the artist. And that's it. So it's going to be less than $1,000 is the goal. And aside from that, obviously, Prairie City's going forward. I have a few other compilations and contests that I'm working on, and I have a Kung Fu space opera that is distantly planned. It's been, I think I'm finally ready to work on it again. It's been a lot of fun, though. So that's a distant plan for the future.
Interesting. Now that sounds cool. We're talking a little bit Star Wars without lightsabers, more kung fu than lightsabers. You already got me.
Yeah, pretty much. It'll be fun. It'll be no matter what happens. What I've already written is fun, so I'm just going to go with that and keep building it. But it's going to be good. So
cool, very cool.
If you go to MarshallEdwards.net, that's where you can find the content. And if you go to the About page, that kind of breaks it all down for you. I also have a podcast. I'll tell you about that later because I feel like I've gone too much into everything. But if you go to MarshallEdwards.net and start looking around at the About page and all that, you will kind of see a breakdown of what projects I'm working on. So.
Very cool. Very cool. So let me ask you this. Are any of those projects, from a comic perspective, is the Kung Fu Space Opera going to be a comic book or are you going to work more in the comic industry?
I do want to work more in the comic industry, but I think as far as comics go, my focus is going to be Prairie City Response alone for now. And if I have had a couple people sort of earmark me and say, hey, you know, I'm working on this. Would you mind looking at it? I need a writer. Do you want to look at this and see if this is something you want to work on? And, you know, I don't want to overcommit because I have my own things that I'm going, but I am interested and I'm looking for other comics projects because script writing and prose writing are different, but I'm trying to keep a balance between the two. So there will be more, but for now, I'm just worried about Prairie City, and I guess that Mayfly, I did think about turning it into a comic book, but I thought if I kept the barrier kind of low and just said, how about an illustrated set of short stories, then, you know, I can kind of build from there and, you know, start building the world art-wise. And if it becomes a comic, that would be cool. We'll see.
Very, very cool. So let me ask you real quick. I know we've got MarshallEdwards.net as a place where our listeners can go in and check out some of your other work. Do you have a Twitter handle or anything like that you want to get out here?
I do. It is Prairie City Post is my Twitter handle. So, yeah, hit me up there and say hi. I post some political stuff on there. So, you know, you might say, oh, my God, this is horrible. I'm not following this guy, but who cares, whatever. I can't, you know, I a lot of people sort of toe the line better and separate the two better, and I have to cut a balance. So I hope you find me tolerable, and I hope you find my writing interesting is what I hope you get from my Twitter experience.
I'm a big fan already. I'm anxious to see where you go with all this. Let me ask you this, because I was looking around. I know I already got a copy of Prairie City Response. I believe you can pick it. Uh-huh. You can actually order digital copies from your website. You can also get it on. I know you can get it on Amazon on the Kindle side as well.
That's correct. That is correct. It's the same content. I just haven't promoted the Kindle as much because I've had more people go for the PDF, and it seems a little more universal. But it's there. It's definitely there. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in picking up, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just realized I should mention that I am going to have physical copies soon. I will be at here in Kansas City. I'll be at the Crossroads Coffee House on first Friday of October. Crossroads Coffee House is downtown. But I'll be there with some copies of the comic that are signed, and I'll be giving, you know, I'm not giving those away, but I'll be selling them. And I'll have some prints of the artwork from Prairie City Response on the walls. So I'm part of a group called Drawing Frenzy, which meets in Kansas City at the Crossroads Coffee House every weekend, both Saturday and Sunday. And it's a great group of creators who are, you know, up and coming, and they're developing their stuff, and they're, you know, they're getting ready to, you know, put it out there. But if you come by in the month of October, you'll see art from Prairie City, and you'll see art from those people. And, but long story short, the physical copies are on the way, and I will have a waiting list for another printing, because I way undersold myself on how many physical copies people would want, is my initial feeling. So,
Very cool. So October, I believe that's the 4th of October. And you said it was the Crossroads Coffee House in Kansas City?
That's correct.
Very good. You'll be able to go meet the creator in person if you're in the Kansas City area. Pick up a copy of PCR number 1. If you are, however, not in the Kansas City area, you can pick up a copy of Prairie City Response number 1 on marshalledwards.net. Or if you happen to be a Kindle person, you can also check it out on Amazon.com. I highly encourage everybody to take a look at this book. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I look forward to the next one, and I'm very excited to jump on board and help you. I'll be jumping your Kickstarter the next time. I'll be helping you out where I can, because I'm very excited to see where this goes.
All right. Thank you very much. It's been great meeting you both. It's good meeting you, Stephen. And if you ever want me back, just let me know. This was a lot of fun. So.
We got to get you caught up on Saga, and then have you and Jason talk about it.
Sure.
Very good. Right. So just to catch everybody up, you've been listening to the Culture of Comics podcast on the AMDG Radio Network. We have had Marshall Edwards, the creator of Prairie City Response, a local Kansas City comic book creator. We talked with us today about his project, Prairie City Response, some of his other projects as well, and, of course, the creation process for comic books, which can be quite difficult, it sounds like, but rewarding. Again, if you want to check out any of Marshall's work, you can check out marshalledwards.net, of course, you'll have all of his projects there as well. You can pick up a copy of PCR number 1. Do it before I find you. That's not really a good threat. I'm not that scary. But I really appreciate talking with Edward today. Marshall, if you don't mind, Stephen and I usually go through, and I know I talked to you, you don't have to take part in this, but if you don't mind, I think we're going to go ahead and go into our picks of the week.
Okay.
Stephen, do you have any
this week?
I'm going to continue on picks of the week just overall to the DC lenticular covers. I think that I continue to be impressed with the stories. I just wish that DC could make storytelling their highest value, you know, the other 11 months of the year instead of saving it for, you know, 1 month out of the year when they do all these one-shots. But I've really been impressed with the stories in the one-shots. I love the covers. As I said, it's a little throwback to the 90s and some nostalgia there for us. But good stories. I like those. We are heading to end really enjoying, I said this last week, I'm cheating again, but I'm really enjoying Jonathan Hickman's Infinity and Battle of the Atom. I mean, after my sort of dim view of it, the very first time we talked about it, I'm really enjoying it, looking forward to every issue that's coming out, and they're not making me wait too long. There's an issue shipping every week in a different one of the books. So in Marvel, I continue to recommend Infinity. If you don't feel like you want to get all the tie-ins, you can just get the 6 books that Jonathan Hickman's writing, and you're still going to get the main gist of the story. Battle the Atom, that's going to be a little harder to do it that way. And then as far as the lenticular covers, I would just say go to any books that you are obviously already pulling. Make sure you get the 3Ds of those if you can, or at least, if not the 3Ds, the 2Ds, and get the stories. And use it as an opportunity to dig into some books that you don't normally subscribe to and explore them a little bit through a one-shot of a villain. That's all I have this week, Jason.
Very good. I would agree. I think the villain side of things have been pretty fascinating so far. I would say my favorite DC book of the week so far has been Superman 23.2, which is the Brainiac story. Brainiac, I think, you people think Lex Luthor's the best villain. To me, Brainiac's Superman villain. He's everything. I know that's heresy, and I'm sorry, gang, but Brainiac is Superman's penultimate villain. He's just the best. So I really enjoyed the story. I have not found many of these villain stories that I have not enjoyed. They've all been interesting. And I'll tell you what, the Ventriloquist DC book was super creepy. Super creepy. Very dark for a Batman book. Even for a Batman book, very dark. My Marvel pick, Ultimate Comics number 30, the conclusion to Ultimates Disassembled, was the culmination of many, many years brutal happenings. Reed Richards, of course, being the villain of this arc, comes to a close. The Infinity Gauntlet comes into play, and I won't spoil the end of that for anybody, so don't ask me. On my independent side, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Prairie City Response Number 1, a very cool little book. Of course, we just talked about that today. But I also really enjoyed Star Wars, Star Wars Number 9, which actually had a very interesting take with Princess Leia and meeting the creator of the Death Star's superweapon. So very, very cool book this week. So those are my picks for the week, this week in particular. Stephen, I know before we wrap up completely, next week we have the DC show. Do you want to give us a little preview of what we're going to be talking about?
Yeah. Excuse me. You caught me mid-cough there. I wasn't prepared for my cue. No worries. So next week we will be discussing He-Man, Batgirl, Batwoman, and Jason will have a few words to say on that. We'll be talking about Trinity War, Talon, Suicide Squad, and we'll be discussing Villains Month at length. I know we've alluded to it. I've generically today in my picks that I said that I've enjoyed them, I have probably about eight or nine just from this last week. I think Jason and I are probably up to like 20 just in the last 2 weeks. But So the big topics will be Trinity War and Villains Month, and the individuals will be He-Man, Batgirl, Batwoman, Talon, and Suicide Squad. So picking up the second and third tiers of the Batman family, calling back to a show that we did early on this season on Batman. So looking forward to that, Jason. We're getting moving ever closer. Can you believe it's September already? We're already moving towards the end of the season and the end of the year.
I can't. It's been a good ride. It's been a lot of fun. Next week's show is sure to have some interesting conversation, maybe even a little controversial, I'm sure. We have some interesting viewpoints on a few of those books. So tune in next week on the Culture of Comics, of course. First of all, before we wrap up today, let me give my wholehearted thanks to Marshall Edwards for joining us. It was truly a pleasure to speak with you today. Very interesting, very good to get this back.
Oh, no, I'm glad you had me out. I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
It's okay. No, it's totally fine. This show is about you today. I really appreciate you joining us. I think you learned a lot. We got some good conversation out of the deal. And I look forward to talking with you in the future. I'll be talking with you throughout. I'm probably going to start stalking you now, just so you know. But I look forward to talking to Mitch, checking in with you on Prairie City Response in the future and seeing where it's going. And maybe just getting your thoughts on some of the other books that are going on around now. And, outside of that, you have been listening to The Culture of Comics. Of course, this week we did interview, of course, Marshall Edwards, creator of Prairie City Response, which you can pick up on marshalledwards.net. My name is Jason Fraser, your host for the day. Of course, with me is Stephen Heiner, as always. And any final words, Stephen?
Nope. Looking forward to next week.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.